From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we continue with our Coastline candidate interviews, and on this edition, we meet Representative Frank Eiler, the Republican from Brunswick County who has served North Carolina's House District 17 for 3.5 terms and is seeking a fourth. We invited his Democratic challenger, Charles Warren, on the show. Mr. Warren canceled his appearance 2 days ago, citing an emergency. We wish Mr. Warren well. House District 17 is located exclusively in Brunswick County and includes slightly more than the southern half of the county. 91% of voters are white, 7.5% are black, and about 2% are categorized as other. Among registered voters, 38% are Republicans, 34% are registered as Democrats, and 28% are unaffiliated. Representative Frank Eiler was appointed to his House seat in 2009. After Bonner Stiller stepped away from the post, Eiler won re-election 3 more times and is seeking his 4th term. He has worked as a cost accountant and a budget supervisor in the textile industry. He has owned a fast food franchise and worked in sales and marketing. He's also served as chairman of the Brunswick County Republican Party, chairman of the 7th Congressional District Republican Party, and as precinct chairman. Representative Frank Eiler, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. It's good to be here. Certainly appreciate you inviting me.
This hour is your chance to get to know Representative Frank Eiler, and there are 2 ways you can do that on this Thursday. You can either call us at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Why don't we start, Representative Eiler, by having you tell us a little bit about who you are and why you want this job again?
Good question. The good question is why I want it again, I suppose. People ask me that quite a bit, and they ask if I'm still enjoying it. At this point, I am enjoying it, and I think I related to you that the feeling of accomplishment when we do accomplish some things overrides the frustrations of day-to-day interaction that sometimes you get, and overcoming some of the perceptions that we fight all the time. Actually, we don't usually fight all the time. And as far as who I am, I was actually born in Mississippi, but I got here as quick as I could. And at age 14, I came to Greensboro with my father when he was transferred to Greensboro, and I went to high school there and met my first wife there and in high school, and basically have been in North Carolina ever since. And that's a lot of years ago. I'm not going to remember exactly how many.
You don't have to. And now you live on Oak Island. You talked about this sense of accomplishment. Can you tell us about a recent doing in the legislature that left you with that feeling of accomplishment. What are you most proud of?
Well, I'm involved mostly heavily in transportation, and I think we've revised the way we do transportation in North Carolina starting in basically in 2013 with a new prioritization system, able to get more projects and more jobs and so forth and out of the same money. We also flattened the gas tax and made it a more stable source of revenue so that we're not surprised when the wholesale price of oil goes up, it jumps up, and it goes down, it drops, and we have to figure out how to do projects on a long-term basis, not just a year at a time. Actually, education has been a key for me. I was married to a career English teacher, and I went and visited all the schools in 2013-14, and I've done some more of that since then.
Do you mean in the Brunswick County system?
The entire school system, all 19 schools, and sat in one classroom at least for a day each, and or about a day each, and was able to see what the teachers and teachers' assistants are doing. So I've been able to go and tell real stories in Raleigh and I think impact our budgets a little bit to keep our teacher assistants and also to the last 3 years, the average teacher has gotten about a 15.5% increase over the 3 years as far as pay, and they're up to an average of $50,000 this coming year, as well as $66,000 including benefits. So, you know, I feel those two things, education and transportation as far as statewide, have been my biggest accomplishments. But, again, locally, we've been able to impact money for dredging. We're working on beach preservation and protection, and I've also had an impact on insurance rates, although it's hard to tell because they keep going up, just not as much as they would have, you know.
You're talking about homeowners insurance,
property insurance. Homeowners insurance for the coast, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You talk about impacting teacher pay, and of course that has been a lightning rod of controversy, especially over the last year or so. And critics would blame the Republican supermajority for the initial exodus of teachers leaving the state, and then would say that Republicans recognized what was happening and instituted some kind of emergency measures to address that. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's still progress to be made there?
Well, there's always progress to be made, and as I said at a forum last night, I'm for all schools. It's all about the kids and the parents' choices, not about just, you know, we got to have an education, a public education system. And we talked last night about innovation. The many school districts that would like to have charter-type schools within the public school system, and actually after Katrina, New Orleans did some of that and has been very successful. And New York has done some of that and has been very successful.
You're talking about charter schools.
Yeah, incorporating innovative schools like charter schools within the public school, the traditional public school districts. In other words, now they're outside the districts. They could be, and some superintendents would like to see that type of innovation to, able to take place. We passed a bill last year to, in two different districts to start that process. And that's on a trial basis, and we hope to do more of that. So lots of things are in the works as far as education, and so I'm excited to be part of that.
And so what do you say to people who argue that public money should be put strictly into the public school system because that's the state's first obligation when it comes to educating children?
Well, I say that the investment is excellent. It should follow the child, and investment is excellent no matter where it is. And the public schools haven't suffered because of that. They did suffer when the former governor froze pay in 2009, and we had to unfreeze it by 2014 and start giving these raises, which you don't see in the paper too much. That's what's been happening. But we were driven down into the low 40s in education by the former administration. And I'm not get political here, but that's just fact. I mean, if you look at a chart, that's the way it was. And we pulled it out of the doldrums to some degree, and all this stuff about leaving the state, some of that, particularly on the border line, like Brunswick County and Horry County, because Horry County funds a lot more of their education than their state does. We're the other way around. 65% of the funding for education comes from the state in North Carolina. So, but the point being, there was some of that in the border areas, mostly the exodus was people retiring. You retire.
People leaving the state for better pay?
People leaving the system, but most of it was retirement. And I speak to that because my wife retired with excellent benefits, and teachers have great retirement.
She was a teacher in the Brunswick County school system.
No, North Carolina, not Brunswick County. No,
I see.
Same pay setup all across North Carolina. She was in Nash County.
So WUNC, which is an NPR member station in the Raleigh-Durham area, puts their fact-check claim of teacher pay like this. North Carolina's teacher pay went down after the first budget the governor signed, referring to Governor Pat McCrory. Before it began, the growth the governor's campaign often highlights. So the first budget, the pay declined. The second budget, teacher pay went up. The third, it levels off. So WUNC's conclusion on that front is the recent growth in teacher salaries moved North Carolina from its 2013 to 14 low point of 47th in the nation to 41st by the end of the last school year. And the increases scheduled to take effect next year should move average teacher pay to a little over $50,000, a 10% increase since McCrory was sworn in. But that figure is still far behind the national average, which was more than $58,000 the last school year.
Well, two things. One is teacher pay. I'm not aware that teacher pay has ever gone down. I'm not sure where they're getting that from. The former governor in 2009 froze teacher pay because I voted against that 9-10 budget, which froze teacher pay. She also instituted a one penny additional sales tax, which she said was going to be temporary, and we had to let that expire. Every family has saved $2,000 on average. The average family of four has saved $2,000 on that penny sales tax that we let expire in 2011. So folks have more money in their pockets. Teachers have gotten a 15.5% increase over the last 3 years. And so that's fact. So I don't know. Again, WUNC, I'd like to chat with whoever's doing their fact checking.
With any job, there's always a learning curve. How are you a different legislator today than you were when you were first appointed in 2009? What have you learned?
Well, I've learned that you have to have a good assistant. It's good if they've already been there and know the ropes. And I've got the best in Raleigh. But besides that, it takes a while to learn how to get things done. And since I wasn't a true freshman, I didn't get the freshman orientation, but I picked it up very quickly. And it didn't take many mistakes for me to find out how to do things. And I've been able to get my name on some pretty good bills. I was on the bill that changed the – I was one of the primaries on the bill that changed the way we do roads, and also pushed a lot of transportation changes and DMV changes, for better or for worse.
You're talking about that 2013 bill that 2013 reformulated bill, how the DOT prioritizes projects.
Also this year, I did a big DMV DOT bill also. That was the primary sponsor.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interview on 91.3 FM. We're talking today with Representative Frank Eiler. He's the Republican incumbent in North Carolina's House District 17. His Democratic challenger, Charles Warren, was scheduled to be here also, but said he had an emergency and could not attend. We're taking your questions for Representative Eiler. You can call us on this Thursday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. We'll be back after this 90-second break. You're listening. Listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're meeting the Republican candidate for North Carolina's House District 17, located in Brunswick County. Representative Frank Eiler has served the district for about 3.5 terms, and he's seeking a fourth. If you'd like to ask him a question, you can do that by calling 910-343-1138 or emailing us today at coastline@whqr.org. And Representative Eiler, of course, we have to address HB2, the elephant in the room. A political scientist and pollster from Elon University recently said the unpopularity of HB2 may actually have a reverse coattail effect on the presidential race, generating a bit of added support for Mrs. Clinton by mobilizing progressive voters to turn out. We've watched the state of North Carolina hemorrhage through performance cancellations, athletic organizations canceling their events here. Now the state of California has joined 5 other states that have banned travel to North Carolina. Why did you vote for HB2? And is there anything about this bill that you didn't anticipate or didn't fully understand?
Not really. It's a constitutional issue. Anybody thinks it's a bathroom issue? It's constitutional. The state in the Constitution creates towns, charters towns, and we set their boundaries. It's right in there in plain English. And we also delegate things like zoning and other things to towns. We don't delegate the right to tell every business in town, like 20,000 in Charlotte, how to do their business all the time. You know, there are rules, there are health rules, there are zoning. And health is usually a county issue and state. And but, you know, minimum wage is not town by town. I mean, in Brunswick County, we'd have 19 different minimum wages or 19 sets of bathroom rules or whatever. Yeah, we have 19 municipalities. And, again, we haven't delegated that. They could not do what they did.
You're talking about Charlotte.
Charlotte, of course. And we have reminded them through HB2, okay? And any business that makes a decision after HB2 that made the same decision before HB2 and changes their mind is not making a logical decision. We put things back exactly as they were. Charlotte was trying to dictate the businesses. Any business can do anything they want to today, just like they could before HB2. The NCAA or the Coliseum can have 27 different bathrooms if they want to. They don't have, you know, it's freedom of being able to run your business, you know, without being dictated to by a town like Charlotte. By the way, Charlotte has done things in the past which should raise people's eyebrows. We've had problems for 5 years with them taking money from the airport for their pet projects. How many mayors are in jail? I guess at least one for mishandling money. Other issues have popped up with Charlotte. We've had to, you know, the state's had to come in and say, wait a minute, the citizens are getting wrecked over the coals by this town.
And you're talking about the element of HB2 that does address bathrooms and the requirements for private businesses.
I'm talking about what Charlotte did, period.
Right. But there's another element to HB2 that a lot of these people take issue with, and that is what people would generally describe as pulling back the ability for the LGBT community to sue over discrimination.
They need to read the bill. I don't see that. There was one court issue like that, and until all the pressure or whatever you want to call it started going crazy over the bill, and falsely, they weren't talking about that so much as they were talking about, you know, some kind of discrimination, which is not in there. But that court issue, I wouldn't have minded tweaking that. But once it started, I didn't want to touch it because I knew it would just be another lightning rod. It was a campaign issue. I mean, I'm not saying the mayor and the gubernatorial candidate, Cooper, were in collusion. I'm just saying it was set up as a campaign issue with this mayor, and she pushed it through and by one or two votes or whatever it was. And it started a whole chain reaction that we had to do something. It's what is it that you do to remind them they can't do that? Everybody that did business with Charlotte would have had to conform to that, to those rules.
So if you could take the politics out of it, if you didn't have to build consensus on a solution to this, how would you solve it, Representative Eiler?
I'm done with it. If there's another bill that we can tweak the court issue, that's fine. We're not going to reopen HB2. There's no consensus among our folks for doing that, you know.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today, we're talking with North Carolina Representative Frank Eiler. He's the Republican incumbent from House District 17. If you'd like to ask him a question, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Martin from Oak Island, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. I would like to say that I think North Carolina charging a sales tax on food is abysmal. It's a terrible thing to do to people. I was quite shocked when I came out from Florida, and the first store I went into, they were charging me sales tax on milk. What would Representative Eiler do to put a stop to this this abuse of the taxpayers?
Thank you for your question, Martin. Representative Eiler?
I'll have to agree with the gentleman. My last time I checked, it was about a 2% food tax. It was put on in the 1960s by Governor Terry Sanford and his party that was temporary. And that's how temporary taxes work sometimes. It's like Governor Perdue tried to put a temporary sales tax. We let hers expire. That temporary tax is still on there. Your prepared food, you pay regular sales tax. Groceries, you pay a 2%, and that was the Terry Sanford tax. But I would be interested in repealing that, replacing it with something else if necessary.
You were one of the people who fought against the restructuring of the film incentive, that has gone from being a tax rebate essentially to a grant fund, a pot of money that the legislature must fill every year. You must appropriate funds for that grant. And there is talk now of beefing up that grant fund, but you can't deny the fact that this state has essentially lost the film business as we knew it. Is there anything to be done about that? And is beefing up the grant fund the answer? Is that enough of an answer?
Well, a lot of my colleagues don't like incentives of any kind. Okay, that was a headwind that we ran into. I was for, as you said, I fought against changing that. We had a great thing going here and in Southport as well as in other places, Bergall and as well as Wilmington. And the folks in Wilmington, I've seen the sound stages. I see what the industry it is. And so I fought that, and Representative Ted Davis has been a champion, as is Susie Hamilton. And again, we've fought against our own party, you might say, in many ways, because in incentives in general, you pick and choose losers and winners, winners and losers. First, you know, that's not a good thing. And then secondly, be sure you choose winners, and that was a winner. So, again, I fought that, and I hope we can improve the grant program if that's all we can get. Representative Davis took a half a loaf. Maybe we can get another half a loaf and keep moving and get some of that back. But I told him on the House floor that Georgia loved us when we did that because I heard stories. And I asked the film folks to be sure every legislator got a story about a family that had raised their kids through film money, you know, raising their kids here, a story every week, and we didn't quite get that marketing program going, but there was a lot of that, and we should have kept it here.
How do you feel about incentives in general? You mentioned there's this general philosophy about not picking winners and losers. That's the job of capitalism to do. I think that's the underpinning of that. But obviously, in cases like this, the film industry was a huge part of the economy here. It's hard to argue against that. Would you argue against incentives for, say, a large manufacturer in the middle of the state?
To me, it's a case-by-case situation. And is that manufacturer solvent enough to pay us back if they don't perform? That's the key.
And there have been a couple of cases recently, not in your district, but I think in Wake County, there have been a number of cases when municipalities or counties have promised incentives and given them in the form of tax breaks, and it hasn't worked out.
Yeah, to me, it's like a loan because you'll eventually get your money back in taxes if they perform and if the business succeeds, which you hope they do. We've got a couple of large industrial parks sitting in Brunswick County, which we need the jobs in that part of Brunswick County and in Columbus, and it's less than 14 miles from the port. And we should have major industries over there already, and we've lost two or three, and the incentive program was so slow getting off the ground. We need probably, like South Carolina, has a committee that can make decisions, not have to go to the legislature every time. So I'm for some kind of commission that can make that decision at the top level in the state to give incentives and then guarantee we're going to get it back, you know, in some manner, just like a loan, basically.
So you're in favor then of incentives on a case-by-case basis, having gone through some sort of serious vetting process?
In the cases I mentioned, yes.
And is that why? Is it the lack of incentives that has kept those big companies from moving into Brunswick County?
Well, there's one company I'm familiar with that wanted to come, and they said, we'd like to break ground next month. And we said, well, we'll see. We got to vote on it in the legislature. Well, the other state didn't have to vote on it in the legislature. So they said, well, they were ready to go. So we were behind the eight ball. You know, and getting back to film incentives for a second, we were in the top three in the country when people thought, where am I going to shoot my film? Major films and major series. We had two major series here, you know. And so we were in the top three. Now we're not even close, you know.
What do you think about North Carolina's issues around redistricting? A court has ruled several congressional districts in the state as having been racially gerrymandered. If you go back through history, it's apparent that there's a built-in conflict of interest there with legislators drawing districts. Do you agree with that idea? Is there a solution? How would you move this forward?
Well, there's two things. One is, it's interesting because I heard that the Republicans immediately started asking for racial information. Well, if you're going to make sure you don't do it racially, you got to have racial information as if you're – and I know that the people that drew the districts were very painstakingly trying not to make it racial. Now, politically, there's nothing wrong – you know, there's maybe wrong, but there's nothing illegal about that. But they tried very hard not to make it racial. And, again, you can sue in court for anything, and that's what they did. You know that the suits are going to come, and it might be successful. So we'll be redistricting again in the middle of the decade using old census data, apparently. So that's going to be problematic. That one, that's the first point. The second point is everybody talks about an independent commission to do districting, and it's non-political, nonpartisan. Well, I don't want to chuckle at that, but I do get a chuckle when people say nonpartisan. Who's going to appoint these independent people? The parties, and the politicians, the public servants, whatever you want to call us, will be appointing those people, and you'll never get politics. We try to get politics out of the road building. We've done 90-some percent probably, but it'll never all get out of it, and it'll never all get out of redistricting. So the places they've tried it, I haven't heard any great success or failure. I have no idea what, you know, some people think it's great, some probably think it's awful in Iowa and other places that they've tried an independent commission.
Yeah. We have an email from Bill in Southport, and he's asking about communication and how you respond to concerns from your constituency. He says he is a northern import, new to North Carolina and Brunswick County. He'll be voting in his second election. He considers himself an independent. He asks, do you feel it's your obligation as an elective representative to respond to communications directed towards you concerning a county issue?
Well, I was going to say, yes, I respond to everything, but he said county issue. We attempt to address county issues. The first place, he's lucky that the State Port Pilot, every week I'm in session, I send him an article about what we've done the previous week, and they've been publishing it. The Beacon started last year. The Pilot has been doing it for 7 years. So every week we're in session, well, you know, the citizens are in jeopardy while we're in session, as you know. So I try to let them know what's going on every week, and they've done a great job publishing it. Secondly, they can call my Raleigh office, which they can find the number right online at ncleg.net. They go to my number, it's 919-301-1450, and I got the best assistant. If she can't connect you with the right person, she'll connect you with me, and I'll try to help you. But county issues, I have a great rapport with our county commissioners and our county manager, who's the best. And we can usually help you with county issues, and particularly if it deals with roads. I mean, our counties here don't build roads like they do in South Carolina, but they, they can help you with a lot of issues. And we can refer you to the right person. And yeah, I try to answer everything. You know, sometimes I miss one. I had a bad personal spell around July and August, a personal tragedy, and I missed a couple of calls, and I lost the numbers, and I still feel guilty about that, but it's only a half a dozen folks, I hope. But anyway, we try to answer every call and every letter and every email at some point. Sometimes I got to do some research. I got a letter the other day. It was day the 6th. It came through my office, October 6th, and I wanted to get right back. I said, well, I need to check something out before I get back. So, yeah, we try to answer everything.
And the personal tragedy that you reference, would you rather not say that on the air, or that's your call?
Well, a lot of people in the county know I lost my wife a year and a half ago. I got close to my brother, and he passed in July. And he has no children, so I'm handling his estate. So that's kind of personal for the air.
Of course it is.
My mind wasn't exactly focused like it should have been for maybe a couple of months there.
And, of course, I'm sure on behalf of all of our listeners, we offer you deepest condolences for that. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Representative Frank Eiler from North Carolina's House District 17. If you have a question for him, and we're taking questions today, not comments, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we do have an email from Shane, who asks, he's referring to HB2, and he says, we're bleeding more and more every day. To me, that's like getting a shot in the leg and refusing to treat the wound because you disagree with why you were shot. None of the politics matter anymore. We're bleeding millions. Is anyone willing to stop it?
Well, put it simply, North Carolina is not for sale. We have a constitution. If you want to live under the constitution, if not, then there are other options. you can call Charlotte and call the mayor's office and talk about why they did what they did. There was nothing that would have been done had they not passed that ordinance that would have affected all the businesses that even do business with Charlotte and really overstepped the bounds a town has constitutionally. Even have the right to zone, do zoning and other rules, but when they abuse citizens or businesses, the state has to say, you know, wait a minute, that's overstepping. So, and actually, like I said, we're responsible for chartering towns, you know. And in fact, one of our folks reminded us that the states created the federal government, not the other way around originally. So.
There is always criticism of the current administration and the prevailing party, the majority in Raleigh. And, of course, we've heard a lot so far during this conversation about what you're proud of and what you think has gone well in the last several sessions. What's going wrong in Raleigh? What do you think needs to be corrected?
Huh, good question. that's a really good question. I think, as they say, as long as we're in session, the people are in jeopardy. There's a lot of folks that want to turn back the clock and undo a lot of things that we've done and actually use the media, including the Raleigh paper and others who are like-minded, to put out false information. I think that's a real problem. I think the media in general does their job, but I think sometimes they can be abusive as far as putting out facts that are not facts, you know.
And that is something that we'll pick up when we come back from the break. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today, North Carolina Representative Frank Eiler is with us. He's the Republican incumbent from House District 17. When we come back after this break, you'll have a few more minutes to get your question in. You can do that on this Thursday by calling 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Frank Eiler, North Carolina representative from House District 17 in Brunswick County, is with us today. If you'd like to ask Representative Eiler a question, this is your last opportunity. The phone number for this live Thursday show is 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. His Democratic challenger, Charles Warren, was scheduled to appear today, but he told us a couple of days ago of an emergency that prevents him from being here. And of course, we wish him well. Representative Eiler, just before we went to break, you were talking about instances in the media that you think treated the goings-on in the legislature unfairly or perhaps even got it wrong. Can you give us some specifics about what you think the media has gotten wrong about what's happening in Raleigh?
Well, I mean, you can call it wrong if you want, or you can call it an agenda. I was given a statistic yesterday nationally that 96% of donations from the media go to Democrats and 4% go to Republicans. So I think there's a bias that everyone wants to be liked. Everyone wants to be follow the agenda they heard in journalism school or whatever, that there's a definite bias that when there's a crowd on Morrow Monday and there's 200 people, this might be reported as 2,000. And if you have 2,000 for the Values Coalition, it might be reported as 500. It's just, and that has happened, that type of thing. Maybe not that drastic, but, minimize what you think is the bad guys and play up what you think is the good guys. So that's one example in Raleigh specifically. But it's just statistics given throughout, quoting one poll, which is always leans one way, PPP poll, public policy.
Right. That's poll. A slightly left-leaning organization.
Yeah, versus Civitas. I mean, Governor McCrory has a 4-point lead in Civitas and probably a 4-point deficit in the other one. So And the media likes to quote, seems like, quote those other ones, the Elon and the PPP and all that, ahead of the, more credibility than the others. So it's just subtle to some degree, and there are a few specifics. I've been misquoted a few times, but usually an honest mistake, usually. They've been pretty fair to me. So, again, it's just a general attitude and agenda, it seems like, that's there.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Representative Frank Eiler from Brunswick County, North Carolina House District 17. If you'd like to ask a question, you can do that by calling 910-343-1138 on this Thursday or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. Darcel from Leland, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. Representative Eiler, I'm Darcel, and I belong to Leland Ladies for Legislative Leadership. I would like for you to address, to the best of your ability, the reality of racial and income disparity and inequality in our county, and how could you work to make participation better for all parties? And one last thing, what good thing can you say about your opponent? And that's it. I'll wait to hear your comments.
Thank you for your questions, Darcel.
Okay, the first part, income disparity, and did you catch the whole question?
Income disparity and racial disparities.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, frankly, Darcel, it's long term. Education is the key to everything. And I think opportunity for education, whether it's given needs-based scholarships to young people that want to go to college. I'm very active with the community college. I think that's an excellent place to start. I think the public schools should be fully funded, as you may have heard some of my efforts along that line. I think other schools should be offered to minorities. There are schools set up in some of our inner cities and in other areas geared toward minorities.
You think there should be special schools for minorities?
That can be utilized by minorities. You can't totally, do it that way. But I'm saying we don't want to resegregate. We want to make it available to low-income folks, and that would solve a lot. The income issue solves a lot. And I think the rest of it is in your heart. I mean, you can't legislate fairness or non-discrimination, really. You can try, but it's in your heart. So. But when you get the economics right and you get the education right, I think you can do a lot. And I've been working on all that with jobs. I wish our industrial parks were full up there in the northern part of the county. Again, in the Leland area, we're fortunate that we're really a suburb. Well, I don't want to say this, but I will. But Leland folks will kill me. We're kind of a suburb of Wilmington to some degree, but we also got our own growth there, and there's a lot of, service jobs, but they're jobs. And I think education and opportunity is the key to that. And the second part of the question was about what one good thing about my opponent.
Yes.
Well, he lives in my neighborhood, and he's a nice guy, and he and I get along. We got along well last night at the forum, and I saw him at somewhere this morning and shook his hand, and so we're okay, and I understand his wife had a little procedure. I asked about Dolores, and she's apparently doing okay, but got some more tests coming. And so we talked about that sort of thing. So he and I get along well. We live in the same precinct in Oak Island.
When you consider, Darcel raises the issue of racial disparities here in a number of ways, but when you think about it from a law enforcement point of view, this is something that's come up a lot in this state, and the recent shooting of Keith Lamont Scott in Charlotte. Do you think there's anything that needs to be adjusted with the current method of policing law enforcement in North Carolina? Do you think there's anything for the state legislature to do on that front?
Absolutely. I think that fully funding our law enforcement so they can train as well as they can be trained, I think they need to have more education. And again, they're already doing this, okay? But just be sure that we're educating folks in conflict resolution, in drug issues, drug is huge. Drugs are huge in Brunswick as well as other places. So there's a lot of issues. I mean, I think our law enforcement in Brunswick County, under our sheriff's department and under our local police departments, is excellent. The law enforcement is excellent, and very proud of what they've got going on. They try to stop the drugs at the river, but that doesn't work too well. So we got an issue just like New Hanover County. On the other side of the coin, we've got the media, again, needs to quit blaming the cop every time something happens before they know the facts. You say, let's wait for the facts, but we know he's guilty. I say, what? You know, so it's like, really? I mean, how do you justify, you know, that attitude, you know, about the cop's always wrong, you know?
We have a question. Jay writes, term limits are a hot national issue. When would term limits be beneficial at the state level, and would you support a term limit convention to change term limits at the national level?
I think we ought to consider term limits in a bill. There's been some suggestions along that line, maybe 12 years, you know, something like that. And nationally, maybe two terms, which would be 12 years for Senate what was it, 10 years or 12 years for the House. I would consider that, and really I'd consider it as part of a convention of states to try to do a lot of things to amend the Constitution through the state efforts, not just through Congress. But that's another issue. Again, term limits are fine. We get term limited every 2 years because you got a new election every 2 years. Enough people don't like what I'm doing, I suppose I'll be very limited.
Do you support your party's candidate for president? Why or why not?
I do. You know, it's really sad, and I've been telling people this, and if you quote me, then, you know, so be it. You may get back to Donald Trump. I don't know. But I think it's the first election that I've been. My dad always had an expression, the lesser of two evils. Never did like that expression, but this election, whoever wins will be more a reaction to the other one. That I don't love our guy, but I like the other one. I dislike the other one more than I dislike mine. So I think this will be the first election in my lifetime that it's a definite vote against instead of for, and that's kind of sad for our country. All the reasons that you've seen on TV. Yeah.
And when you think about all of those reasons, are you comfortable having that person in the White House?
Well, I know one thing. Reagan had some experience as governor of California. They treated him almost the same way, although he was a little more cautious in what he said. He was an actor, after all. But he surrounded himself with really good people, and I can only hope that we will see really good people around Donald Trump when he's president.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we're talking with North Carolina Representative Frank Eiler. He's the Republican incumbent from House District 17. And John from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So Representative Eiler suggested that he supported increased funding for our police forces here at local and state level. I'm curious what his position is on funding or using that increased funding for body cameras. For police in North Carolina, I've seen independent studies that show in localities that do use body cameras, violence drops up 97%. How does Representative Eiler see that positively affecting our communities here?
Representative Eiler, thanks so much for your call, John.
Thanks, John. Great question. My friend John Faircloth, representative from High Point, who was a former police chief, sponsored a bill last session, which we increased the funding for body cameras. It needs to be increased to the point where it will be body cameras will be available to any police department that wants them. So I guess I'd be 100% for what John's recommending. They need to be taught how to use them. One of the worst things you can have is have a body camera and say, "Did you get that on your camera?" And say, "Oh no, I turned it off just before that." You got to be trained how to use it. So, you know, you don't have a worse situation than you would if you didn't have one. You know?
Do you think climate change is real? And if so, what should the state of North Carolina be doing to combat it?
Well, climate's always changed. You know, when I was a kid, I was told you can't change the weather. You know, it's whatever it is. But, climate is changing, and it's changed over, billions of years.
Do you think that man-made causes have anything to do with it?
Well, they had climate change long before man was here, and is my understanding, they, through the geologic records. I did a little bit of geology when I was in college. So, again, we we should do a few things like fortify our beaches. People say, well, that's just throwing, you know, good sand after bad. But if you can see what happened in Matthew on our beaches in Brunswick County, they're flattened, but the sand is still there. It's amazing enough. The ocean is no closer to the houses than it was, you know, before. But before Floyd, it was right up to the houses in the same position in, near where I live. So the sand is still there. It just got flattened out, you know, and those dunes worked for 15 years. Now we got to, you know, figure out how to put the dunes back. But the sand is looks like most of it's still there. Mm-hmm. And so, again, sand's going to come and go. The temperature is going to rise and fall. In fact, I think I just saw on one of our TV stations we had the hottest date yesterday was in 1898 or 1899 was the hottest day of yesterday, whatever the date was, 20th, 19th, whatever it was. So, again, we had a lot of heat back in the 1800s also. Before we had the Industrial Revolution and all. So
you're not concerned then about, I just want to be clear, you're not concerned about the effect of carbon emissions, for instance, on the planet?
Actually, I'm concerned about carbon emissions because of the air we breathe and if it has a better effect. Again, we're switching our coal plants to gas, natural gas. You see the one right outside of town?
The Sutton plant.
The Sutton plant. The stacks are gone now after being off coal for 3 or 4 years. So, yeah, I'm in favor of going to the cleanest energy we possibly can. But I'm for everything. I mean, nuclear is clean, but we stopped that in the 70s, you know, and kind of shot ourselves in the foot. So, again, I'm for all kinds of energy.
And if nuclear were to have a resurgence, which might require funding from the federal government, would you support that?
I would, and I think if it's viable, it'll probably be done privately. But maybe it needs some incentives, you might say, from the federal government.
What do you think your critics get wrong about you? If you're talking to someone who is an independent voter, someone who has an open mind going into this election, what would you say they might misperceive about you or your party's platform? And if they understood this one thing about you, they would really understand you and vote for you.
Well, if they understand I came from a business background and I want things that work, I'm pragmatic. If they may perceive I'm a hardcore conservative, something, whatever they think conservative means, and usually it may or may not be, you know, accurate. But to me, it's I'm just, you know, a pragmatic guy that wants things that work and don't want to take everybody's money out of their pocket to give it to somebody else.
Yeah. And let's say you're reelected for your fourth term. And you're looking back now to, it's 2018, you're looking back at this fourth term. What happened? And how is the state better for having had you there in the legislature?
I think you're going to see improvement in our transportation prioritization. You're going to see that they're going through 4 or 5 prioritizations now since we changed it, and it's getting better every time. I think you're going to see improvement in education, innovation. We've started that last session. I think it's going to continue. You're going to see taxes actually go down. We actually built in some triggers into the statutes that the actual business tax will drop in 2017 to 3% because we got a surplus all of a sudden. Mm.
That's this edition of Coastline. Representative Frank Eiler, it's been a pleasure having you with us today.
Thank you.
Remember, one-stop voting begins today, October 20th, and runs through November 5th. You can find a list of early voting sites at whqr.org. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast from the iTunes store. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.